I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about mental illness and addiction and the toll they take on lives of Hoosiers all over Indiana. Next month, law enforcement and health officials and experts will gather for In Arms, the Indiana Annual Recovery Month Symposium. We'll talk about what the symposium is and the larger challenges it attempts to address with my guests, Sarah Cozad and Ron DeWeb from the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration's Division of Mental Health and Addiction. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about In Arms. That's the Indiana Annual Recovery Month Symposium that will take place next month in September. It's sort of a gathering of law enforcement and mental health professionals who are trying to seek solutions to a problem that unfortunately afflicts far too many Hoosiers. If you'd like to join this important conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Sarah Cozad and Rhonda Weber from the Indiana Family and Social Service Administration's Division of Mental Health and Addiction. Well, welcome to both of you. Sorry, that's a mouthful to get through. I almost had to take a breath in the middle of it.
Thank you.
But it's good to have both of you here. So tell me a little bit about what In Arms is.
Absolutely. I'll start with actually talking about Recovery Month in general, because that kind of started our In Arms in Indiana. So National Recovery Month is in September, and our Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, another mouthful. We love our acronyms. So SAMHSA has been doing Recovery Month for about 27 years. It's held every September, and it's to increase awareness and celebrate successes of recovery, and to talk about the fact that behavioral health is essential to overall health, and that prevention works, and that treatment is effective, and that people can and do recover. And so that overarching annual or National Recovery Month that happens annually, we in the state of Indiana started the Indiana Annual Recovery Month Symposium. So I did want to just kind of speak to that larger national situation that's going on. And then Rhonda, if you want to.
The National Recovery Month has been in existence for 27 years. We have had our In-Arm Symposium for 8 years. This is our eighth year. So it brings together, it's Division of Mental Health and Addiction in conjunction with the Department of Correction. We bring together addiction, mental health, criminal justice, and community-based organizations to explore approaches to recovery. So we offer a diverse selection of breakout sessions to meet the needs and interests of all the attendees. So we feature topics that include treatment and recovery, co-occurring, peer recovery and support, youth prevention and treatment, and criminal justice.
Is there does it change from year to year, or do the topics stay the same?
They change from year to year. This year, our overarching theme is our families, our stories, our recovery. And we did adopt that from the National Recovery Month, but we felt that it met what we wanted to present this year at the conference. We wanted to focus on recovery because we're still talking about treatment, but I think that people are more open now to talking about their personal recovery and how it impacts their lives and their families' lives. So we have a lot of speakers that speak to recovery and tell their own personal stories.
Now, can anyone come to this, or is it closed to people who are sort of working the...
You know, it is absolutely open, because the other part of this with our families, our stories, our recovery is that focus on family and their role in recovery. And so there are the majority of the focus, it is very clinical, and I will say that there are continuing education units that are available for the professionals, but we are open to having a wide variety, and so there's no requirement. You don't have to be affiliated with anyone, and so we're excited to kind of say we want everyone that it could impact, and so that's not just professionals, that's not just our Department of Correction partners. It's anyone in Indiana who cares about recovery.
And if people do want to attend, where do they go to find the information?
They can go to our website. It's inarms.org. That's inarms.org. There they can find information about the workshops, the schedule. They can register there. There's a link. They can register for the conference for either day, Monday or Tuesday, or they can register for both days. They can also find a link there to, if they need a room to stay at the conference hotel. We're at the Marriott East, Indianapolis Marriott East on 21st Street. There's a link there. They can book their room if they need to stay overnight. So all the information they can find there. And there's also an email address. If they have additional questions, they can email us at inarms, and again, that's inarms, at fssa.in.gov.
And we will put that information on our Facebook page, too, okay, so that if people want to follow it. Is there a cost to attend? How much is it?
Right now, we have our early bird prices going on, so if you can get in by August 31st, you can get the early bird prices. One day, if you just want to go one day, it's $40. If you want to come for the whole two-day event, it's $75. And there's also links on there for vendors. If they want to have a vendor table, we will have vendors set up so they can present their information.
So we are very excited to say that we took feedback from past years. And so one of the things that we were able to do this year is we're providing food. And so no one has to leave the site. So we're very excited to kind of say that this is a one-stop shop. You can come in, explore the vendor tables, attend obviously our plenary sessions, but also the breakouts. And then we'll be offering lunch both days. And so on-site parking, all of those things. So if you're traveling to downtown Indianapolis and you're worried about where to park and having to pay for all of that, it's all going to be accessible, easy at the Marriott East.
We're really excited to have two hot meals instead of last year. I think we had a box lunch, but this year we're having two hot meals. We're having a buffet one day and a plated lunch one day. So it'll be really good food there.
And we've talked about it being on a Monday and a Tuesday. We ought to give the dates, though, so people can make
their plans. That would probably be helpful. So September 26th and 27th, so it is that Monday and Tuesday.
And is there significance? That's toward the end of the month. Is there significance to those dates, or is it just that was the easiest place to plug it in?
You know, there's a lot of coordinating and organizing. There are other Recovery Month events going on, and so I will just speak to the kickoff of National Recovery Month. Fairbanks, one of our partners and treatment providers, is actually working on the event called Coloring the Canal Purple. So we're very excited to have this celebration of National Recovery Month kick off with the Coloring of the Canal. So it's going to be actually Thursday, September 1st. So it's the first day of September, kick off the National Recovery Month. It's going to be from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The location will be the canal level off Ohio Street. So between Senate and West Street, so that area of the canal that's by the government center. And so it'll be that, again, bringing awareness to the fact that mental health and addiction treatment is critical to, again, our overall health of our communities, and celebrating people who are in recovery and who have realized that treatment does work.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about really issues of addiction and mental health here on No Limits. The news hook, as we say in my line of work, for this is the Indiana Annual Recovery Month Symposium next month, NARMS, and National Recovery Month, which is also next month. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So, and I want to talk about these larger issues of mental health and addiction, but before we leave sort of the news hook, as I just called it, I'd like to talk about What are the goals for the symposium? I mean, what do you want to see come out of it? Sarah, I'll start with you on that one.
Thank you for that question. And actually, I think the goal has been, since the very beginning, the kind of spirit of the symposium has been to bring professionals together from both the mental health and substance use disorder addiction fields. Historically, they haven't always worked together. Mm-hmm. There's been kind of this mental health and addiction silo. And so roughly 8 years ago, the idea was we need to bring these providers together in addition to, again, our criminal justice providers. And so this network and this collaborative opportunity to have conversations across disciplines has been the spirit. It's also about evidence-based practices. What we know in our industry is that treatment works, but there are certain types of treatment that are evidence-based for working with this population and with the variety of mental health and substance use disorders that our providers treat. And so it's really about looking at evidence-based practices, giving life and new techniques to what our providers are doing, reinforcing all the hard work that they're doing, offering networking opportunities, and again, promoting that spirit of recovery. And so that's always our goal, is to bring people together, to have those conversations and to network across disciplines.
Have there been ideas that have come out of, this is the eighth one, that have come out of the past symposia that have changed either policy here in the state or at least at a fundamental level the way we approach these problems and the people who suffer from them?
Absolutely. I thank you for asking that question, because I think that initially when this started, actually, so In Arms officially began in 2009, but it was in 2007 that the Department of Correction and the Division of Mental Health decided to come together for what they called the Bridge to Recovery. And it was taking into consideration that corrections and the justice involved, along with mental health and addiction, need to work together. And so that was kind of that starting point. I will tell you that there are so many exciting things happening in our state right now related to those partnerships. And so it's not just a discussion about we need to work together. We actually are working together. And so when you talk about legislative changes, I'll take a minute just to speak to new legislation that occurred in 2015. It was HEA 1006. And what actually that created was the Mental Health and Addiction Forensic Treatment Services Fund, which we have developed into a program called Recovery Works. I don't want to take the whole time
no,
talking about recovery works,
I mean,
but it absolutely,
this is a show for people with attention spans.
Wonderful.
They will listen to you.
So it absolutely is that demonstration that people in our legislation, people in our variety of disciplines hear that this is an issue that faces us all and that we all need to work together in order to support people into that pathway to recovery. So there are lots of great opportunities that have come from In Arms, again, bringing people together to have these conversations. Roughly 300 to 400 people attend each year. And so, again, that's almost 400, 500 people that are talking about these very important issues that then take that. It's that call to action then, mm-hmm. That they take the information and the resources and the evidence-based practices that they've learned during this two-day conference, and that they take that out and they do things with it. So it's not just that one day come and learn. It's what are you then going to do to impact your community and to work with the people that you network with?
Rhonda, what do you find most valuable about the symposium?
Well, it's always evolving, so but I think the biggest impact is the networking, the people that get to network with each other, because in the southern part of the state, they may be doing things completely different. Their clients are going to be completely different than the providers we have in the southern part of the state. So mm-hmm. So they get to interact and see what works best. And they can try different things to provide the best service.
And, with this, out of this 8 years, has the attendance remained somewhat static, or has it grown? Are there more people coming to it now?
It has grown. When we first started, the conference was addiction only, okay. So everything was related to addiction. But then we added mental health and criminal justice a few years back. So we're mm-hmm. growing because we're more people from different fields are mm-hmm. attending. Mm-hmm.
And I do want to talk more about that whole, because often the folks who deal with sort of treatment of people who have either addictions or mental illness questions have seen themselves as at loggerheads with folks in law enforcement. And we're going to talk about that when we get on the other side of the break. Was it difficult to get people to buy in on both sides to working together?
I wouldn't say it was difficult to get the buy-in. I think that there's that concern of how do we work together? What is it? They're kind of different worlds, and so it's talking different languages often. The realization and the buy-in that we all need to work together, I think, is there. It's more about the logistics of how that works. Who are the funding sources? How do we get the resources together?
If you're just joining us, we are talking about In Arms. That's the Indiana Annual Recovery Month Symposium next month, which is also National Recovery Month. My guests are Sarah Cozad and Rhonda Webb from FSSA's Division of Mental Health and Addiction. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881 or send us an email or reach out via social media. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about In Arms. That's the Indiana Annual Recovery Month Symposium. It's part of National Recovery Month, which is next month, September. It's a gathering of law enforcement, mental health professionals who are trying to find solutions to the problems that afflict far too many Hoosiers. My guests are Sarah Cozad and Rhonda Webb from the Indiana Family and Social Service Administration's Division of Mental Health and Addiction. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, we were talking about the symposium before we went to the break, and I want to give you a chance to sort of wrap that up before we get into this larger question of mental health and addiction, and particularly the challenges that we're seeing here in this state. We've talked about what people gather. What sort of things will they find? You know, who are the speakers? Who are they going to hear when they come to it? Rhonda?
Okay, so each day we have two plenary speakers and two breakout sessions with 12 workshops per day. So you'll have a choice of two workshops to go to and then two plenaries each day. We have some amazing speakers for our plenary. We have Amy Bickers. She is a professional writer and editor. In 2009, she witnessed the violent suicide of her ex-husband, who had been struggling with substance abuse for many years. And so she wrote a book in order to make sense of the tragedy and deal with her grief. She wrote a book called The Geography of You and Me. So she's going to be talking about the exploration of her grief, the post-traumatic stress, and what she did to heal from that event. And then that's on Monday. And also on that day, we have a criminal justice and addiction panel, which we are calling Reentry and Recovery. So the focus is on criminal justice and addictions. The panel is going to include individuals that have been incarcerated. And then we're also going to include mothers of people that have been incarcerated. And so they're going to tell their story and share their experience of how they dealt with that. Mm-hmm. And then we have on the second day, we have Dr. Daniel Rusniak. He's from the Indiana Poison Center. He's going to be talking about the emerging crisis of adolescence overdose in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And then we have Mark Sanders, who's an international speaker in the addiction and mental health fields. He has written numerous books, and he's had two stories published in Chicken Soup of the Soul. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be talking about the future of addictions treatment in America.
I would say that the breakout sessions, in addition to the plenary sessions, which are going to be fantastic, cover such a wide variety. So we'll kind of have a track. So if you're a professional on the criminal justice side and you're looking for more information about mental health and addiction treatment, you'll be able to attend those. We also will have peer support specialists and folks who, again, have lived recovery stories that will be speaking. We're also looking at things kind of on the lines of recovery support. So things that might not be your common mental health and addiction treatment evidence-based practice, but things like yoga for recovery and somatic processing for recovery. And so some really interesting, again, evidence-based practices and promising practices that you'll be able to come and learn about and, again, network and walk away with hopefully with lots of resources that can inspire you and reinvigorate you as a provider, because we know it's tough to do this work.
And speaking of that, we're pulling in, you know, 400 to 500 people, right, who who do that. And that's only a portion of the people in this state who are working on dealing with these issues. Mm-hmm. How large a problem, or how large are the problems here? I mean, do we have some sense of the scope of mental health issues and the scope of addiction issues here in Indiana? Sarah?
Absolutely. So if we kind of look at just general statistics, roughly 20% of our population at some point in their lives will experience some type of mental health issue. So that can be just kind of anxiety or depression. When we talk about serious mental illness, so those diagnoses like schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, major depressive disorder, it's roughly about 5% of our population faces serious mental illness. And so when we talk also about addictions and incarceration, we know that this is a huge issue in our state. There are disproportionate numbers of people who have serious mental illness and addictions who are incarcerated. And so that's an even larger issue than just kind of the standard that we're looking at with mental health and addiction. It's that focus on treating the people in the right place at the right time. And what we found is our criminal justice partners have kind of become the de facto mental health providers, unfortunately, due to some, long-standing policies and funding issues. So this is an issue that not only faces 5 to 20% of individuals, but it's all of their family members and friends and community members that have the impact of those who are struggling with mental health and addiction disorders as well.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Shannon. If you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. She wants to know, how has the focus of the event shifted since it started, and what are participants hearing is of critical concern to Hoosiers from the treatment side and the criminal justice side?
So I think, again, as Rhonda said, in the beginning, it was kind of this focus on just the evidence-based practice as well as looking at addiction specifically. Mm-hmm. And then we've brought in that mental health and addiction component as well as that focus. I think we added focus on it wasn't just adults any longer. We talked about children and families. Things like gambling addiction that not everybody kind of thinks of as an addiction disorder. So we had a huge gambling component early on. They've kind of taken their own efforts to have their own gambling mm-hmm. event and things. Veterans issues mm-hmm. as well has been a huge focus that we want to continue. Adding kind of those groups that as we see people starting to work together more naturally and kind of, again, mental health and addiction are working together more naturally, Department of Correction and Division of Mental Health working together, that we start to kind of think, okay, so we've ticked that off. Now, what's the next group to focus on? Because I don't think that we're ever going to run short of, specialty populations that we can continue to support. So things like last year, we had a very solid track of LGBTQ. So mm-hmm. Looking at that special population again, and their unique needs when it comes to treatment, high suicide rates in that population. And so, again, looking at suicide prevention efforts as that relates to this as well.
Are there portions of our population that suffer from, mental health challenges or addiction challenges disproportionately? Trigger for that question is you talk about very high suicide rates mm-hmm. among the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community. Are there other sort of threatened populations in this state?
So I would say first and foremost that mental health and addiction disorders do not discriminate. We all have the potential risk of having some type of mental health or addiction crisis in our lives. I would say that the functional impairments that come with mental health and addiction-related disorders are often more difficult for folks who don't have resources. And so while I would say, again, everybody has the potential to either have mental health and addiction disorders in their lives or in their family's lives, folks who don't have resources, the chronic stress of poverty, this is a huge issue because those of us who have the ability to know very firmly where we're going to stay tonight, that we have a safe and stable home, that we have food, that we have supports and resources available to us, we have a better likelihood of managing
that
those.
No supposed loved one's going to beat us up or
yeah,
something like that.
Precisely. Yeah. And so we have that idea that we have resources and supports, and so there's hope. Mm-hmm. And it's those who don't have the hope that often tend to then have more chronic and debilitating experiences or become involved with the legal system and then have those additional stressors and triggers. So I would definitely say that if we can talk about this more openly, that this is an everybody's problem, not just those people problem, then everybody will start to recognize that we all have a role in supporting our community in recovery.
Does the way, and we alluded to this before the break, to the fact that often mental health professionals and law enforcement professionals were at loggerheads, about whether, addiction and even some other manifestations of mental illness were crimes rather than, symptoms or diseases. Does the way that we approach this, many of them still are criminal matters, hamper recovery in some cases, or is it a non-factor? You're both looking at each other. I know it's a tough question. One of you has to answer it.
I don't want to monopolize, but I'll go ahead and do so.
Okay.
So I would say there are some belief systems historically kind of rooted that, crime and punishment is the way. And I think that that has been, historically for decades kind of the way we...
often that... that mental illness and addiction themselves are not necessarily diseases, but
moral
failings,
failures. Right? If they just would, do this or do that or absolutely. And so I'm excited to say that we have we've come a long way in our state. Again, as I was speaking to the legislation and that Recovery Works program, the key thing that we are learning is our state recognizes that what we've been doing, incarcerating folks, isn't really working. And that while they're in jail or in the Department of Correction, they are in need of treatment still. And if we don't provide treatment and resources, what we see is a revolving door and a recidivism rate that is really, really high. And so the idea that historically we can just kind of criminalize this and incarcerate this away, I think everybody recognizes that that's not the solution. And so there are a lot of great efforts working right now to figure out how do we all learn from one another. Another initiative that the state's working on is kind of looking at evidence-based practices related to criminal justice matters and involving mental health in that discussion. And so it's been really exciting to hear that we recognize not everybody who comes into contact with a police officer should be arrested, but if the officer doesn't know where to take them for the treatment and the support, they are limited with what they're able to do. And so it's, again, about providing them resources so that they can say, this individual actually doesn't need to be in jail. Mm-hmm. They need to be in treatment. And so there are things like crisis intervention teams and efforts related to that so that officers have more understanding of how to de-escalate situations mm-hmm. where someone who maybe is experiencing a psychotic episode and thinks that they're that officer is threatening to them, that they have the ability to de-escalate that situation rather than scare that individual and that maybe they become aggressive. But that's what I really want people to understand, is that people with mental health and addiction disorders are not typically violent, and their crimes aren't typically violent. It's usually about either untreated illness, and so mm-hmm. that they're not necessarily making great decisions, or that maybe they're making criminal decisions in order to support their need for substances in order to function, right? And so that's, I don't think anyone says, I want to become an addict. It's that process where brain disorders and addiction, it truly is a disease. And it's no longer, I want to use or I don't want to use. It's, I need to use in order to be okay and to not be sick. And so it's about, again, resources and education so that everybody knows that there are other options out there.
What is recovery? I mean, how do we define recovery? Rhonda, I'm going to...
There's different definitions of recovery. SAMHSA has their own definition, and we hear different definitions in the field. But basically, it's a person's ability to live the very best life they can with what they have. They use their recovery, get the treatment, and live the most productive life that they can live mm-hmm. with their illness or addiction.
What is the, you know, the perception, at least with alcohol addiction, is that, you know, at least certain programs will say to you that you're never supposed to say, in effect, I've been cured or my mm-hmm. problem is solved. I'm, you know, the accent is on keeping the present tense. Mm-hmm. I'm a recovering alcoholic mm-hmm. rather than, you know, mm-hmm. Is recovery ever permanent, or is it an ongoing challenge?
It's an ongoing challenge. You can overcome it. You can live a good life without the addiction. But I think that you're always going to be in recovery.
Mm-hmm. So, Sarah,
I think that it's key that we always kind of focus on, again, the person rather mm-hmm. than the disease or mm-hmm. rather than the language, right? It's not that we have to call them, you know, an addict or once an addict, always an addict. It's once a person with an addiction disorder, that's a person who needs to continue to work on their pathway to recovery. Or that person who has, you know, schizophrenia, they're not going to be cured. I don't get to take a magic pill and then I no longer have schizophrenia. It's something that they're going to have to live with. But just like any other chronic disease, like diabetes, right? If I have diabetes and I manage it well, mm-hmm. Per doctor's orders, my diabetes is never going to go away, but it can be managed and I can live a very productive and healthy life. And I think that's what we need people to understand, is that you're a person with an illness and it doesn't define you, but it absolutely is something that you have to think about so that you can live the healthiest life possible.
What is the biggest challenge in changing that mm-hmm. perception, though, of people? Because there still is a tremendous stigma mm-hmm. to questions of mental health and addiction.
Yeah, I think that, again, it's what we're doing today. It's having the conversation mm-hmm. that recovery is possible, that treatment is effective, that people can and do recover from mental health and addiction disorders. I think, again, it is about talking about mental health and addiction just as we would talk about cancer or diabetes or any other chronic health issue. It is a health issue. It is not a mental health or addiction issue. This is about health. And if we look at whole person health, our mind, our body, our spirit, they all go together. And so it's about looking at that individual in the whole picture. And that we have to talk about parity between, again, physical illness and mental health and addiction so that we can have more research and more funding and more support services in place. And again, having those conversations so we can reduce stigma. I don't think that people, are as comfortable saying, I have a major depressive disorder as they would be able to say, you know, I have diabetes.
I think we're moving in the right direction, though, especially with these conferences. More people seem to be more open to talk about their recovery. So I think we're heading there. I think we're getting there.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about In Arms. That's the Indiana Annual Recovery Month Symposium. It's part of National Recovery Month. which is next month in September. My guests are Sarah Cozad and Rhonda Webb from the Indiana Family and Social Services Social Service Administration's Division of Mental Health and Addiction. I knew I was going to blow that.
It is a mouthful,
once,
isn't it?
At least once during this broadcast. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email, nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Sarah Cozad and Rhonda Webb. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about mental health and addiction issues. The springboard for the conversation is next month's Indiana Annual Recovery Month Symposium. It's part of National Recovery Month, which occurs every September. The Recovery Month Symposium takes place September 26th and 27th. At the Marriott East Hotel here in Indianapolis. My guests are Sarah Cozad and Rhonda Webb from the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration's Division of Mental Health and Addiction. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener has done named Pearl and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Pearl, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thank you very much.
Certainly.
My comment and question is that if you are dealing with an adult who has mental illness and addiction problems, and they do commit a crime and they do go to jail or serve a home detention sentence, then they are released and they have absolutely nowhere to go. They cannot get a job. That services, when you don't have a way to pay for them, are not available. So you've got people who, and I really think in a lot of the mentally ill cases, it's the mental illness that's causing them to run to addiction, and then they get out and have no hope. And I mean that very sincerely. They have no hope, mm-hmm. And I still haven't heard. He knows all about the services that they say are available to help people get jobs, but they're not. You can report to your parole person, and there's no help there. There seems to be a prevailing helplessness and hopelessness. Mm-hmm. So that's my comment.
Thanks very much for the call, Pearl, uh-huh. And I really am sorry for your troubles. Thank you uh-huh. for sharing with us. Thanks. So there's a question of resources there, mm-hmm. And we've got another question from a listener on Facebook that's similar. What mm-hmm. says, what variety and types of options are there in Indiana for people seeking support for substance abuse that's related to Pearl's question? If you're in that situation,
absolutely.
What can you do? And let's start with what can you do, mm-hmm. and then in a perfect world, what should we be doing?
Mm-hmm. Anybody that is seeking services can call our office, and we can refer them to a provider that's in their area. We have 25 community mental health centers throughout the state, and we also have 225 certified addiction providers. So we can get somebody linked up with services. The community mental health centers have case management. They can help these people find jobs. They have all the skills training.
Mm-hmm. Supported employment.
Supported
services.
Employment. So there's resources available. They can contact our office, and we can get them linked up, provide them phone numbers and locations.
Please give the phone number or the email or the URL. I mean, if people are calling like this, listening to this program, I don't want them to have to take an extra step.
No, absolutely. Thank you.
Right. Our main line is 317-232-7800.
Go ahead and give that to them again.
317-232-7800. That's 7800. They can contact that number, and we'll get you to the appropriate people that can provide you the information on where to find services?
It's also really easy just to Google DMHA, so Division of Mental Health and Addiction, DMHA, or to go to IN.gov and search for the DMHA link. It's a lot easier than me giving you the URL. But I do want to speak to the caller's point about hope. It is very critical that we address that fact, that oftentimes people leave incarceration and they feel hopeless. They don't know exactly where to turn or what to do. The family members, I get lots of calls from folks who are saying, what do I do? And while I will say, absolutely, we have resources available, as Rhonda said, and we want you to call and let us connect you, there is room for improvement. There's always room for improvement. And we do recognize that in our state, that we have limited resources and a really huge problem, specifically the opioid epidemic right now, access to medication-assisted treatment, access to a safe and stable place to either detox or to stay in recovery. And so that's often what people are talking about is there's nowhere for my loved one to go to get sober, to stay sober. And we are at the division looking into those issues. But I will state specifically for folks who are involved in the justice system, so are on supervision, have a parole officer, have a probation officer. I do want to again speak to the Recovery Works program. It is a funding source for folks who don't have access to either Medicaid or HIP or private insurance, or they're pending their insurance, because if they're incarcerated, when they come out, there's sometimes a little gap in when they can get their coverage turned on or when they can get those applications in. So the Recovery Works program is a funding source for individuals who have a felony charge or a felony history, who don't have other payer sources and who need access to resources. So that's another thing I would love for folks to just do a quick Google search, Recovery Works and DMHA, and you can go and find the resources and the information. The key thing with this is that the criminal justice partner is our referral source. So for that mom who was saying we're looking for support, talk to that parole officer, talk to that probation officer and say, hey, we really need some help and we'd love a referral to Recovery Works and we can get them hooked up with some resources, including housing supports, which is a really unique part of the Recovery Works program.
And I probably should have asked this question before this point. What is the link between addiction and mental health? You know, there's often this perception that they're separate issues, but nope, you're shaking your head. We need actual words.
Sorry, it's radio.
That would work on television, but we're not on camera here.
So absolutely. Again, the caller spoke to it perfectly, that oftentimes untreated mental health issues result in people what commonly is referred to self-medicating, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to manage my situation, my circumstance, my illness, and that has been a coping mechanism to manage those difficulties. That's not always the case. Not everyone who has a mental health disorder has an addiction disorder. Not everyone who has an addiction disorder has a mental health disorder, but they are often what we call co-occurring. So co-occurring disorders, meaning that you have both a primary diagnosis of mental health and an addiction disorder. They're very, very commonly seen together.
Yeah, I've had people who are important to me go through this. And again, and I know there is a lot of debate because there's, you know, the knowledge base when it comes to mental health is still evolving.
Mm-hmm.
We're still learning a lot more about the way we think and act and all of that. But at least what I'd always heard is that you have to deal with the addiction first to get to the mental health question that may have given birth to it. Is that the case?
So I am a proponent of you meet the person where they are. And oftentimes folks don't recognize that maybe there is an addiction disorder and they're willing to work on the depression or the anxiety, for example, or the trauma. So I think, again, it's about treating the person as a whole person and an individual and looking at their individual treatment needs. If we say this blanket statement that you must deal with the addiction or you must do this first, we're taking out the fact that individuals are unique and have different experiences. So I think it's about safety first. So if we're dealing with an addiction disorder that is life-threatening, like so many of them are, I think that's what we're talking about, is stabilization and working on safety. What are your thoughts?
Rhonda.
Yeah, I agree with her, with Sarah, because oftentimes with our addiction providers, well, actually the behavioral health providers will have someone come in for some anger management, some depression, whatever it is. And then they'll come across incidental addiction issues. So, I agree with Sarah. I think it's treat the person and then the incidental services as, you know, as necessary.
And this is probably something we ought to say, too, as part of this discussion. It is important to call them people with mental illness rather than the mentally ill.
Thank you.
I wanted to get that out.
I appreciate that. We absolutely, again, call that person first language because, again, you don't say that diabetic, right? You say that person who has diabetes. They're always a person first. And so it's when we call you a schizophrenic or we say you're an addict, we are losing you as an individual and you're becoming your illness. And that is not at all hopeful. Really, yeah. And that's, again, what we're talking about is recovery, and that recovery does exist. And if I only think of myself as my illness, then recovery seems elusive.
We are talking about mental health and addiction here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Margaret has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Margaret, welcome to the program.
Thank you once again, and both to you and your guests. I want to thank you, John, if I may, both for your comment a couple of minutes ago about encouraging how information access needs to be very simple. And then number two, to both and your guests, with regard to speaking of people with mental illness. Now, I'm both was a caseworker at the U.S. Senate level in Washington, D.C. I used to help with getting information out, and I'm only simply saying that to let your guests know, I think they're doing a terrific job with this caveat, and that goes back to John's, your very sensitive, astute notion that for the receiver and the potential user of this information, I'm hoping we get more real people back on the front lines answering the phone. The website stuff is terrific. It's a great additional resource. But and then I'm going to blush and say on a personal basis, I speak of this. I've had the good fortune of being okay this past 15 years. But that five-year period in the early 2000s, you know, I didn't even apply for partial reimbursement from my, I was blessed with some health insurance coverage because as I called to get it, it just didn't make any sense. And I remember bursting into tears and even saying to the nice person who was telling me what to do, this is too complicated. I can't do it. I am a mess. And I was depression and some post-traumatic stress stuff. And she even said, I know, I am so sorry, but this is how we do it. So I'm just letting you all know, A, thank you. You have come light years in bringing this to public discussion. Please keep it up. And the initial point of contact has got to be able to ask questions and kind of guide it. Well, I'm okay now, thank goodness. I'm very blessed on that. But guide people through to a particular way or become a case manager, something. It is when one is experiencing illness that we call mental illness. Organizing one's thought is incredibly challenging. I myself am a disposition that is stream of consciousness. It's called a sales and marketing type personality. But I have succeeded in very well and had some nice credentials, including some degrees showing that I am capable of working very highly. But when I went through that period, there were days I could hardly remember my name. And I could see the numbers in my mind, but I couldn't get them out speaking.
Margaret, I don't mean to cut you off,
we're
getting close on time here, and I want to give them a chance to respond. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for sharing your story with us. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Margaret, thank you so much for calling and for your encouraging words that, again, you're an example of recovery. But you're absolutely right. You speak to the fact that if I'm in a crisis or even just a really difficult place where my thoughts and my ability to kind of express myself are an issue, then it's going to be very difficult for me to navigate a system that is hard for professionals to navigate. I do want to just reinforce the fact that our community mental health centers that Rhonda mentioned are there for people who are in crisis, honestly, and who are in need. If you can't navigate the system and you're out there and you're looking for help, even if you can just have somebody in your life get you to that location, so even if that individual can find the community mental health center in their area or they can call that one number and say, I need somewhere to go, the community mental health centers are equipped to see people on walk-in for crisis so that they can help you navigate those exact same issues that you're describing. So while I 100% understand that our system is difficult, please don't hesitate to just show up somewhere and say, I need help. That is what they're there for.
I'm going to try to squeeze one more phone call in. Steve, welcome to the program.
Yes, I'd like to ask the panel if there's assistance for debilitating nicotine addiction.
Good question. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Steve.
Did you have anything about that? So that is a fantastic question. And what we also know is that while nicotine addiction in the general population is going down exponentially, it stays steady with our folks who have mental illness and substance use disorders. So I would recommend going to the Nicotine Anonymous site. There are lots of Nicotine Anonymous resources, but also that is a huge focus, again, of our community mental health centers, that whenever they're doing an initial assessment and screening, they're always supposed to be asking about if you are looking for support or resources in stopping smoking and smoking cessation. So while I don't have very explicit information on that, again, give us a call at the
317-232-7800.
Thank you.
And real quickly before we take off in about 15 seconds, if people want to go to In Arms, how do they do it?
It's inarms.org. That's inarms.org. You'll find all the information you need to know about our symposium. You'll have descriptions of all the workshops, the speakers, the schedule, where to register, where to get your hotel room, all the information's there. There's also a link to our email address. If you have additional questions, you can email us and we'll get right back with you.
Well, I'd like to thank my guests, Sarah Cozad and Rhonda Webb from FSSA. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for the great comments and questions. We will be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about Dig In, A Taste of Indiana. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.